Miss Richard, you
know. Hey, Richard. Hey, what are you fishing? You know, yesterday we were trying to register testimony against the criminal testimony of Christians. And I thought the hearing was not that long. He was shy about it. He brought it all up.
Yeah.
You know, he.
So,
you had to. I should have written down that route. He impressed me, when he
didn't pull the that's what you call demonstrative evidence.
It's not sending me no, but I think it's a staff thing. See, I don't get into the mail. You keep talking about this shit, I really don't know what you're
he needs to be on the other side. Flags are backwards.
Well, explain that to him. Ticket is that as you're looking at the flags, no flag flies to the right. Or as you're looking at the
flag flies to the right of the flag itself.
You just got to work out. I mean, I think if you just said head
pass, just like the ground ones,
that's correct.
But that's correct. Keep it just saying
that's correct. So that flag on its right, this is back.
I had a lot more success.
Okay, then the flag is a chamber of
rocks.
Okay, let's swap the lenses on. Oh, well,
they've got a backward bend on the corner.
They do?
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. So it's arguable. And there wasn't one before. Somebody switched them.
No, they switched them. That's right. No.
Yeah.
Always the American flag.
Oh, so yeah. These are right.
Can you put that in the minutes? We got the flags.
Yes.
Do you have an escape?
Is there this side?
We're trying to get donuts.
I know.
He's called.
You know, I don't want to be so
serious. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Bring
them
out.
I had a craving
for sugar. Oh, cool.
Sure, that's too good.
Now, we're going to be doing steak.
Well, no, I'll talk to him because I'm definitely going to be in position for the whole family.
You're kidding.
A lot older?
I thought it was going to be a more interesting session.
The deal, they added the deal.
Good afternoon. Hello, I'm the House Finance, January 26th. Time is about 2, appears to be about 2:17. Today, in attendance, we have Representative Holm, Representative Kelly, Representative Foster, Representative Wyrock, Co-Chair Meyer, and myself, Co-Chair Chenault. Today, we'll have an overview from Joel Gilbertson with the Commissioner of Health and Social Services on senior care, healthcare program. And also, I think John Sherwood, staff to the Office of the Commissioner, will answer questions. So with that, Joel, if you're ready, we'll take your presentation. We do have some members that are unavailable because of the LB&A meeting dealing with a couple of pipeline issues. So hopefully they will show up and get a little bit more information on the proposed senior health care. With that, Commissioner, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, good afternoon, everyone on the committee, and thank you for
inviting us here today. We were asked to come and present. I believe the bill's not before the committee yet, but to talk about a bill that has been introduced in the legislature, submitted by Governor Murkowski. It is House Bill 106, and it deals with the Governor's Senior Care Initiative, more specifically a component of the Governor's Senior Care Initiative that will allow the state to assist seniors in the state in affording prescription drugs. This administration worked cooperatively with the last legislature, and many of the members in this room, to pass legislation during the last session to establish a senior care effort in the state of Alaska. That senior care effort took a few different facets. Some were done outside of statute, such as establishing a senior information office. So now we have a one-stop shop for seniors who need access to services, both federal or state, within our department. And there are also some other components of it, but one piece was the establishment of a cash assistance benefit and a prescription drug subsidy for low-income seniors. The governor's proposal, as introduced in House Bill 106, builds off of both the federal Medicare prescription drug benefit, which begins in January of next year, and also the effort done by the legislature and the administration last session to begin establishing at the state side additional support for seniors who need help with prescription drug costs. The needs have been discussed for a long period of time. I don't feel a compelling need to restate them today. I think everyone's well aware that historically Medicare has not covered prescription drugs, and seniors by and large have not had access outside of employer-sponsored plans, access to assistance for prescription drugs. The cost of prescription drugs have skyrocketed. Looking at just our department's Medicaid program, prescription drugs on an annual basis have seen inflation rates as high as 27%. So we know prescription drug costs are increasing while other economic pressures on seniors are continuing. The governor's proposal, specifically in the legislation, is for an enhancement of the senior care drug benefit and for it to interact well with the federal Medicare drug benefit, which begins in January of 2006. Just to back it up for a little bit, Medicare has a number of parts to it. And most people don't focus on that, but there's a Part A, there's a Part B, there's a Part C, and there's a Part D. Virtually all seniors are in Part A and Part B right now. Part A largely covers inpatient services when you go into the hospital. Part B is the component of Medicare for seniors when they receive outpatient services, largely when they go to a doctor's office. They'll receive benefits under Medicare Part D. And Medicare Part C is not in Alaska, but it deals with Medicare Plus Choice plans or Medicare Managed Care, which is in place in some states. And so what will be beginning in January of 2006 is Medicare Part D, a new expansion in the Medicare plan, which will now allow seniors to enroll in Part D and get prescription drug assistance. For Part A and Part B, seniors already carry deductibles for Part A and Part D. They pay a deductible when they go into the hospital, and they also have a separate deductible when they go to see physicians under Part B. They pay a premium under Part B, and seniors are paying that right now. When they enroll, if seniors choose to enroll in Medicare Part D starting next year, they will have to pay another premium for Part D for prescription drugs. And they'll also have a new deductible, separate deductible, for Medicare prescription drugs under Part D. The federal government, in implementing their plan, does have a sliding scale to simplify it. And seniors below about 135% have no cost sharing. And the federal government picks up their premiums and their deductible costs and has a sliding scale up to about 175% of poverty.
150
of poverty, where they'll receive additional assistance in a sliding scale on the premiums and the deductibles. The governor's proposal, as submitted in House Bill 106, is for beginning on January of 2006, when the federal benefit begins, for the state senior care proposal to convert to a prescription drug assistance program that will pay out-of-pocket costs by seniors for premiums or deductibles up to an income level of 300% of poverty. What we have here, I think it's available to every member at their table, and there's also copies to the side for those in the audience as well, but there's charts here that sort of help you understand a little better. It was a pretty complex benefit program. What will be continuing under the governor's proposal is the cash assistance will continue. So if a senior is receiving cash assistance right now, and under the previous senior care proposal, those are seniors below 135% of poverty, and what you'll see on the chart is that means for under annual income for a single Alaskan senior, that's about $15,700, and for a couple, $21,000. They're currently receiving $120 per month. That will continue. And as I stated, these seniors, when they enroll in the Medicare Part D benefit, they will already have access to that drug benefit without having to pay a premium or deductible. So therefore, the state offering to pay that premium or deductible has no benefit for them. So under the governor's proposal, we would continue to make the cash payment in lieu of the premium or deductible contribution. The senior care prescription drug assistance is for seniors above 135% of poverty, up to 300% of the poverty level. And for a single Alaskan senior, that would be up to $34,800, or about $35,000 for an individual, $46,800 for a couple. There is an asset limit. You'll see the asset limits for both the cash assistance and for the prescription drug assistance. And the benefit that you see is $670 per year. And this is based on what the estimate is right now for premiums, which will be a little bit over $40 per month, and then the deductible, which will be, correct me if I'm wrong, John, $250 per month. So that's how we come to the 12 months of that assistance program for premiums, which is comes in roughly a little over $400, and then the $250 deductible for a $600 benefit per individual. We expect to continue to serve the same number of individuals we are currently serving with the cash assistance program, which is 7,000 seniors, and the expansion of prescription drug assistance, which is us paying the premium and the deductible, which is what the senior will have to pay before they can even receive their first dollar of drug assistance. Any senior enrolls in that Medicare Part D plan has to pay a premium and deductible. They're going to have to satisfy both before they get their first dollar of assistance under this plan. We expect that to serve about 10,000 seniors. We can the numbers are much more refined on the fiscal notes, as you'll see. What does that mean? What you'll see on the second chart, under the old senior care drug proposal, which is what we worked cooperatively on last session, if you look at the first $2,500 a senior is spending, the current prescription drug assistance the state is offering under the senior care proposal is a $1,000 subsidy per individual. So for that senior who perhaps, say, spends $2,500 per year for either premiums, deductibles, or actual drug refills, we're currently paying $1,000 of their first $2,500. Under the governor's submission in House Bill 106, under the same scenario, that senior's out-of-pocket expense would be reduced to a little over $450. And what you see in green is the senior care benefit, which is the premium and deductibles on this chart. And in the, and we're going to call this purple in the room, that's above it. What you'll see there is the Medicare drug benefit. Now that'll be provided to that individual for their first $2,500 of expenditures. And the out-of-pocket expense will be reduced to $450. The overarching goal of this, of course, by the governor, is to ensure that we do not have a single senior in this state, after the Medicare prescription drug benefit begins, unable to at least pay the basic premium or deductible. They would still obviously have out-of-pocket expenses as they pay a portion of the drug costs, but we want to make sure we can get every senior into this plan, assistance plan, as it begins next year. What does this mean for real Alaskans, I think, is what this committee will come to. And so we have a couple scenarios, which are on the next chart that you'll see. If you look at a married couple, we call them Bill and Janet, where one is perhaps 70 years old and one is 68 years old. We look at them having perhaps an annual income of $42,000, have assets below the asset limit. Currently, perhaps the husband in that family is spending $2,500 a year for prescription drugs, and the spouse is spending $1,500. For that family, it means that we'll be able to reduce their out-of-pocket expenditures from $2,400 down to $1,000 in that scenario of what their prescription drug obligations are. If you look at a single individual, we call her Mary, who's age 85. Perhaps she has $30,000 of annual income, and again, her assets are below the cutoff amount. If she has $2,000 in prescription drug expenditures, right now, without senior care, she's probably going to be out of pocket under the new Medicare drug benefit, $1,100. With the prescription drug assistance that would be afforded under senior care, that amount would be reduced to $438 for her first $2,000 in drug expenditures. This is an effort, as I stated, to make sure that we can bring seniors in Alaska, particularly our low-income seniors, into a prescription drug benefit plan next year, remove some of the burdens. There are still going to be a number of seniors who have access to perhaps a prescription drug plan through their employer, and they're retired, where they pay a premium and they pay a deductible, just not to Medicare. And so under the governor's legislation in that scenario, We would be able to make payments to that individual private insurance plan, but the cap on our payment would be that amount that we would pay to Medicare for prescription drug assistance for premiums and deductibles. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll pause and certainly answer any questions.
Thank you, John. Any questions? Pretty easy.
During the entrance rate session, we get a lot of queries from our seniors about the cash assistance plan. One of the requirements every year is the proof of income. Annually, a letter gets sent out by the department to offer for proof of income from the individuals and from the people of the district oftentimes, even though they go are going through this process, don't reply because sometimes they're uncertain as to what's being asked of them and maybe aren't fully comprehending. And so oftentimes, if I get seen on the street, people will pull me aside. I don't know what to do here. And is there a system somewhere that can be devised if a person does not respond who has been receiving this, that a follow-up call at that point can be made to people to make sure if they've got the letter too, if they need help filling out that form or something, that we can be put in the loop, because people then go oftentimes months before receiving assistance and it's really become a hardship on many people, especially with with these dollars. There's no allowances for the variances, the cost of living, and everything. And gosh, when we get hit with stuff, we get hit hard. And people who have never asked for anything are starting to ask for help. They're worried. They're worried sick. And these are people who oftentimes at one point were probably the people that you could depend on the most for on-time payments, on-time, keeping up with everything, and then even having some sort of little savings. They don't have that anymore. And they're very worried, very nervous. And I know when they finally get around to either calling my number or stopping me on the street, it's almost at a point of desperation. They really need help. And I think if you don't get a read back, and I know there's a lot of people that could really work, but it certainly would somehow build a safety net so we can catch more of them.
Responding to the chair, Representative Jewell, I think your question dealing with how are we handling the outreach and how are we trying to make sure that seniors actually have access to programs and what barriers are in the way for them, either the application process or information about it, and also some general concern about participating in the programs. One of the things the governor was adamant about when we started the senior care program was actually creating a clearinghouse, a senior information office within the department. We now have that now for the first time up and running in a year. We have a 1-800 number and a website, which I know many seniors don't use websites, but we do have a 1-800 number where seniors have access. They can call either about a federal question or a state question. And we can facilitate how they can find a doctor, how they can sign up for programs. Most individuals are not even aware of the programs that are available, such as energy assistance programs the federal government provides that are managed through the department, the cash assistance, food assistance programs. John, I'm going to ask to answer a portion of your question, because John's actually basically focused on eligibility issues for just about his entire professional career. I can tell you that one portion of senior care, once the bill is actually taken up and you start to probably look a little bit more deeper into the fiscal notes, even within the fiscal notes, we will have a component in it to actually add staff to the senior information office, because we know that there's going to be an increase in outreach and also processing issues as we start a new benefit coming online. I will say, and I know this doesn't directly answer your question, that this upcoming year, the next 12 months, are probably going to be the most confusing and challenging times for a senior to really understand what's happening to their programs. Within the next couple months, the federal government is going to start sending out mailings to seniors asking them to enroll in this Medicare Part D benefit. which is going to be very difficult. It's much more complex than simply enrolling in Part B, because you have to choose which plan you want to enroll in, you know, what types of drugs do you get, and what's on the formulary for this plan versus this other plan, because it's going to be administered through private insurance companies, private pharmacy benefit companies. And at the same time that application is going out, if we're successful in getting senior care passed, we're going to have our applications going out as well. The good thing about cash assistance is we know who these seniors are. Most of them are already in the system. It's this unknown quantity, those that are currently not receiving the benefits. I think the comment's very legitimate, and it's going to be a challenge for us in this upcoming year. But I know John Carver wants to comment as well.
Well, I think, the chair, one issue that's raised is the issue, once somebody's on benefits, every year we ask them to do a review, typically. And we do lose people sometimes when that comes out and we ask for more information. Over the years, we've done some things to simplify that. When somebody gets a federal needs-based assistance payment through SSI, for example, we no longer do require the individual to review with us. We simply verify that Social Security Administration is continuing to pay them their SSI benefit. We usually have not one, but two notices. If you don't return your review the first time, you get a second notice. I don't know that we've had a practice of calling when notices or when reviews aren't returned. We could certainly look at that. One of the things we've done in some programs and have considered with this program, but we don't do yet, is pre-printing the review with the information we already have, so that it's only a change. They only need to let us know if things have changed. But again, we are always kind of trading off making sure we get the best information, the most accurate information, and the kind of the simplest process. Is it a balance?
Follow up. When people do not respond, you probably have some sort of database that says who doesn't and which part of, or even which district they come from. Is there anything that would prohibit you from sharing that information with, for instance, my office, that so that we could make the call? If Big Brother won't, maybe little uncle can. Or little nephew, actually. Yeah.
Actually, you know, I would have to consult with the Department of Law. I think it might take a
confidentiality
statute change to address confidentiality issues. The Department of Law has really come down on us in the past for sharing information with the legislature about confidential programs. There's a special statute around the TANF program, but I'm not aware of a statute around the programs that seniors typically benefit from.
Because we can very easily, if need be, community by community, either go to a tribal council or a city administrator and say, so-and-so, haven't finished, see if they need help with the forms, so that there's little or no gray in that. And, you know, it's about getting the service. And I sure appreciate that.
You can take a look. You can look into that.
Thanks, Chairman Chenault. We apologize for being late. I was spellbound by Mayor Whitaker's presentation, and I didn't know you'd started. So.
What they call
sleeping? Yeah. Can I go off just off topic a little bit to answer a recent question from a constituent?
Sure.
I just got contacted by one of the directors of a senior center facility in my district, and it was on an issue I'd heard a lot about over the year, and that's the payment delays for Medicaid. I guess that's been outsourced to HealthSouth or some other entity. Can you just thumbnail what the solution? How long? I understand there's a whole bunch of software and programming problems in getting people on board. Where are we at on getting a handle on the whole payment schedule?
Well, actually, I think we have Steve Ashman still here. I'll invite him up. Steve Ashman is the director of Senior Services for the state. And he may, I think I know who you're referring to, but.
And, Mr. Chairman, not just restricted senior programs, but that's where the specific inquiry came from.
Right.
It's a lot of the health and
so we actually have as one of our, even if, I know there's interest in looking at missions and measures, we actually have a measure our payment timeliness as one of our measures for the agency. But Steve, maybe you want to talk about this issue. I'm not sure if this is dealing with the the waiver issue. I'm not sure.
Yes, thank you, through the chair. For the record, my name is Steve Ashman. I'm the director of the Division of Senior and Disability Services. Excuse me. On July 1st of this year, the federal government required that any of the codes, procedure codes, that we use for the various types of Medicaid waiver services had to be uniform across state lines. So we had to convert all of our old procedure codes into a new procedure code. That process worked very well for three of our four Medicaid waiver programs. The older Alaskans Medicaid waiver program, which typically is what's being used by the senior centers themselves. So senior centers typically aren't having this problem. The problem that we are having is under our Medicaid waiver for mental retardation and developmental disabilities, they have a database that would not convert the old procedure codes into the new procedure codes, and at the same time, to complicate it further, the number of units or dollar amounts, the value of that prior authorization for that client wasn't transferring over. So we have had difficulties under the DD side of our business in paying Medicaid bills. We believe that by the end of this month, we are converting the DD program onto the same type of database that we use for our other waivers, which works very successfully. That process should be completed by the end of this month. Well, we're at the end of this month. The middle of next month, we hope. But to assist our providers, anybody that's asked for an advance on Medicaid payments, we've facilitated them. So we have retained the cash flow for all these organizations.
And, Mr. Chair, Representative Stoltz, I guess I'm a little confused. Senior centers, overwhelmingly, those waivers, we could not have that problem because the crosswalk to the new procedure codes was integrated into the software itself, and it was much easier to do. So maybe we can follow up as well with the provider in your district and talk to them to get greater information, also provide to the committee the actual timeliness of the payments. We have not overwhelmingly been hearing from senior centers that delays the
No.
Not that I'm aware.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the indulgence, and I'll just follow up with Mr. Ashman and not take up any more of the committee's time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Stoltz, and I think I know which senior center you're talking about.
Thank you. Joe, I guess I'd have one question. You know, how sustainable do you think this program is going to be over time? I'm looking at the fiscal note, watching the climb, and just
Mr. Chairman, it's obviously a concern to the department that whatever we propose, we certainly don't want it to have to change. I mean, you certainly don't want to start a benefit for seniors if you can't sustain it for the long term. This is providing for prescription drug coverage is expensive. It's expensive for the federal government. It's expensive for the state. The senior care program itself was initially funded with a trust account that was set up. There is a balance in that fund. We were also sensitive about just relying upon that balance to get us through the first fiscal year, and therefore then have this huge sticker shock, if you want to call it that, where you go into fiscal year 2007 and you ramp up to a much higher dollar amount. So we were careful with the fiscal note to make sure that we recognize the cost of this program up front in FY06. But the program will cost a sizable amount of money. We project after full implementation of the full fiscal year, it will be between $17 and $18 million per year for this prescription drug benefit. For the administration's position on this is that we invest in our priorities and our budget, and providing prescription drug assistance to seniors is a priority for this administration, and therefore it'll be included in the governor's budget submissions as a general fund obligation. But naturally, it's up to the legislature to determine ultimately how sustainable it is based on a commitment to commit general fund resources.
Representative Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, of the $26 million that we did appropriate, how much of that is still left?
I believe John, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe the expectation is that once we get to January 1, 2006, sort of the capitalized balance that would be there to contribute towards this effort, because I should back up by saying since the Medicare drug benefit doesn't begin until January 1 of 2006, we're already halfway through a state fiscal year, so there's really no expense for this during the first half of the state fiscal year. It would be the last half of 06 fiscal year that this would be running. Our expectations on January 1, 2006, the capitalized balance would be $7.7 million remaining in the fund.
Thank you.
on January 1, 2006.
Okay. Maybe I'm just confused. Why is there money left over? Did not as many seniors take advantage of it as we thought, or did we overestimate? Or
Two things. I think we are Mr. Chairman. Two things. One is that we were very, we would like to say, conservative in our estimates. We certainly didn't want to underestimate the number of individuals who may be able to avail themselves of the program, to be honest, for fiscal note. And it turned out that our calculations were probably higher in terms of eligibles than actually became enrolled into the program. It was very difficult, and I think Mr. Sherwood will probably share that even going into the future, it remains very difficult to predict the number of seniors based on economic data in each of the income brackets, largely because we don't really have good data for that. Some previous programs the state have run have not collected income data, for example. We know how many seniors there are with their mailing addresses, we don't know what their income amount is. So there was a lot of extrapolation looking at national data, some census data, and we overestimated to some extent the number of eligibles, generally. The second problem was we've had a difficult time getting seniors enrolled. I certainly was a little quick to summarize the program, the initial portion, talking about the old senior care proposal. But the old senior care proposal was actually a bifurcated proposal by the governor that the legislature passed. We provided a cash subsidy for seniors below 135% of poverty. We provided a prescription drug subsidy for seniors between 135% and 150% of poverty. That second group, that 135 to 150, we've had difficulty reaching that population and getting them to enroll. We know there are far more than who have actually enrolled. And we've worked cooperatively with AARP, for example. We're doing, we have a new round that will be going out in the next few weeks. We do joint advertising, actual print ads, and other outreach efforts with AARP, where we've shared a campaign to raise awareness. We've got a new round of ads that are going out. I think it's been a very complex issue for seniors who are just now starting to provide prescription drug assistance. The federal government began providing a prescription drug card that was very confusing to seniors last year. Many seniors are still not enrolled in prescription drug cards. There was conflicting information coming out of Health and Human Services as the prescription drug card was unveiled. There was even advice coming out from HHS for seniors not to rush into selecting a card because the information was sort of lagging behind the program itself. And so we had a number of things that contributed to why seniors were confused, and it's been very difficult for us to get through some of the confusion that came out of HHS at the federal level to really target a message towards what is a pretty small demographic, seniors between 135% and 150% of poverty, for them to avail themselves of a drug benefit that never existed before. Our enrollment is far lower than we want, and so we've spent much of the last year working in cooperation with AARP to find ways to outreach to them, working through senior centers, working through other organizations, working with Native organizations, and also doing mass advertising. We'll see papers across the state in the next few months, ads run by AARP and the department, try and promote that.
Okay, so are you pretty comfortable, though, with the, if I may, Mr. Fuller, you're fairly comfortable then with the $17, $18 million figure, or do you think that's going to be overestimating also?
Representative, as we look back at previous actuarial assessments we did for the original senior care proposal, we didn't miss by much. In fact, for the cash assistance benefit, we were fairly accurate. I think John Sherwood, who does a large amount of the actuarial work for the department, will tell you, of course, the larger that the spread and who's receiving the benefit, the more accurate our estimate becomes. Picking the number of seniors between 135 and 150 was exponentially more complex than 135 to 300. So we expect, since we're going to be serving a larger demographic, that our data and our estimates are going to be more accurate.
Okay, and I think if I could follow up on the chairman's
question here.
If we start a program like this, we want to be able to continue. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't want to have to stop it because we ran out of money. Do we have any, I think you already answered this, we don't have, but it'd be nice to see what this is going to cost 5 years from now, 10 years from now, you know, 15 years from now.
Representative Meyer, we do have in the fiscal note that's already available for the bill, we have the calculations out for FY 2011. We can certainly do calculations beyond that. I mean, that's an easy thing. The algorithm is already ready to go. We can provide that to the committee. The fiscal note covers through FY 2001, and it's the administration's position that Governor Murkowski's budget submissions will include that in the general fund request. in those years.
Okay, that's good. And then if I can follow up one more. To qualify this, is it 35,000 or less your income would have to be?
Right for the first chart back up. And Representative, I believe you have, might have these in front of you. This is a sort of a cheat sheet, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
This chart will walk through sort of the two different qualification processes. One for those who will continue to receive cash assistance. This is a continuation of the senior care proposal that the legislature passed last year. Those actually remain the same, though the asset limits are going up a little bit. For the drug assistance, which are those above 135 and below 300%, the annual income limits are there. That you can see it's about $35,000 for an individual and $46,000 for a couple.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Those are based off of Alaska's federal poverty level.
And for the record, Representative Jewell has been here for a while, and we've been joined by our lost prodigal son from the, let's see, that'd be the West, I guess.
You're far enough, it's the East.
Welcome, Representative Moses.
Thank you.
Thank you for...
Did you miss me?
Yes, we did. Miss you every day. We never had anything to talk about.
Well, now you have.
Well, now we do. Representative Jewell.
Thank you. Back to the cash assistance program. 4-8 married couple of elders. They can only file as a couple, or can they file as a single? Can one of the other file with only their financial information, or do they have to file as a couple with both of their refresh minds?
Yes, Chair. Representative Jewell, under our policies, if you are living as a couple, living together, you would have to file as a couple. You don't have your choice of filing as an individual or a couple, depending on, you know, you can't pick which is most advantageous to you. So if people are not living together, even if they're legally married, we would consider them to be single individuals for the purposes of determination. This is pretty much consistent through all of our public assistance programs.
Representative Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What is the difference in cost between for FY 06 on the longevity program, what it would have been at that level with the phase out that was predicted, and the $17 million? I've got three questions, Mr. Chairman.
Responding to the Chair, Representative, I do not have the fiscal analysis of what the longevity bonus would have been in FY 2006. I assume this is probably less than half, but I don't know. I think we're about that, weren't we, John?
Okay.
Remember where the longevity bonus was?
Yeah, we'll get the exact 40 million, but it was going down. I don't remember what the...
It was probably in the high 30s for FY 06. Okay. But we'll get that information for the committee.
And the, Mr. Chairman, the other states, are they doing anything with this gap coverage? If so, how do we compare with, how many of them are there, and how do we compare?
Through the chair, a number of other states already operate what are known as state pharmacy assistance programs. They really vary a lot. Some are quite comprehensive. New Jersey, which is the home of a lot of the pharmaceutical companies, has a very good pharmacy assistance program. Some states have no assistance program. It's kind of hard to characterize. I think we could probably get some information about the different programs in other states.
But in terms of how the benefit is delivered, though, this is certainly unique. I don't know if any other state is offering paid premiums and deductibles for this.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not aware of any other state that's doing this. I think they're continuing their existing program, looking at different ways to fill in the gaps for Medicare. Every state that operates a program like this is kind of asking themselves the question: What's the best way, given the system we have in place now, to modify it to work with Medicare Part D,
and not to overly make it overly complex at this point. Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, the federal agency that's implementing this benefit. Congress passed legislation. That agency is now in the process of finalizing regulations to implement the program. They just put it out finally in final form. So as that agency begins to actually implement, I think that when it's digested a little bit more by states, states may see new opportunities and new ways to integrate their program with the federal benefit that's going to begin. So I think you're going to see a lot of transition over the next year as states begin to retool their assistance programs as a way to augment where there may be redundancies right now with the federal benefit.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Kelly.
The difference between cash in hand and the $17 million, what would that be? In other words, that the on-the-ground buys a bottle of medicine effect of this, that amount, the delivered service versus the total cost of the program. And that's one question. And then my last one would be just to get an idea of what does it do to this if we go 200% at the poverty level?
To the chair, with regard to the first question, are you asking what are the administrative costs versus the direct service costs?
Yeah, what's the drag on the program? So how much, you know, how do you, when you drive a dollar down to the street, what if that's $17 million for the total job, how much lands on the pavement?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm trying to see if I can see the summary chart here.
Our FY06 administrative cost would be $450,000 of the total amount, and I think that there is a breakdown on that which will be available. About $300,000 is personal services. We have to do the applications, for example, to take them in. We provide additional assistance to the Senior Information Office. It does provide a benefit to the consumer, but it's not a direct benefit in terms of cash or certainly subsidies. And then there are some ancillary costs, which are in the aggregate, well, about $100,000 that are contractual. Office space, telephone support, marketing, outreach, which is a big component of that, advertising campaigns to make seniors aware of it. There is also some expense because we have to modify our computer system to administer this. So there is some vendor work to update the Medicaid management information system to process this. I think the administrative expense downstream would probably be about 2%. 2%, John, would you say?
It looks like it's about 3%.
Okay. And then the other question, which was the 200%.
Do you have the extra?
We would have to get that number for you. I can't give you that off the top of my head where we fit.
I can say, Representative Kelly, what we can provide the committee is 300, 250, 200, and sort of give you the breakdown of how we think that they fall in. And as I mentioned before, as you start to narrow those windows, it gets more difficult for us to predict how many seniors are in every 10% of an FPL. But we can certainly tell you.
Thank 300, you. 250. That'd be helpful. Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, thank you very much for your presentation today. I have some... Maybe I can start with a couple of things here. I have a number of questions, Mr. Chairman, and they go to the underlying policy that the administration is trying to. What are you trying to do? You know, what are you really trying to accomplish here? How many seniors do we have that you want to have within this system that you feel need this added benefit? Let's start right there.
Take them one at a time. Respond to the chair, Representative Holm. Well, the administration, the governor's overwhelming concern is to make sure that we focus our resources towards a needs-based population. There certainly was a lot of controversy over the past few years as we began to retool programs away from non-needs-based programs to needs-based programs. For example, we learned as we transitioned from the longevity bonus program to the senior assistance program and the cash assistance benefit under senior care, that half of the seniors who were enrolling under our cash assistance program that was needs-based were ineligible for the longevity bonus because it wasn't a needs-based program. It was merely about when you actually enrolled in the program. The governor's message is consistent on this, which is that we want to target our resources towards, first, needs-based programs, and that explains why we're targeting a subset of the entire senior population. We believe that there are slightly over 40,000 seniors in the state of Alaska. Through this program, we'll be serving a little over 40% of them. And where we, as an administration, have drawn a line for a needs-based program is at 300% poverty. And those are the income levels that we showed. 7,000 seniors would receive the cash assistance because they're below 135% of poverty. And 10,000 seniors will be in that demographic up to 200%. Why prescription drugs? There have been tremendous gaps in our Medicare program for a number of years. The governor, as a senator, worked tirelessly for a number of years with his colleagues on the Senate Finance Committee to pass a Medicare prescription drug benefit. He was unsuccessful with his colleagues in getting it passed. He voted in favor of it for a number of times. Congress was able to pass it in 2003. For almost 40 years, the Medicare program ran without even covering prescription drugs. It's becoming an increasingly large portion of seniors' out-of-pocket expenses when you look at their rent, their housing, their food expenses. Prescription drugs are a huge component of that. The governor wants to make sure that as this Medicare drug benefit becomes available, and certainly Congress has done its part to get the program up and running, we want to make sure that seniors are eligible to enroll in the program, and that simply being unable to afford your premium is not a good reason to keep a senior off the program. And if the state of Alaska can assist seniors in being able to afford their premium to get them into the federal program, then that's something that we as administration support and want to do.
Thank you. Chairman, through the chair. Thank you for that. My observation is 40% appears at the outset a very large number to call the needy of that subset group. So I would like you to think about why it's so large. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me that 40% of our seniors should be classified as needy by the government in any form.
I'll respond to the chair, Representative Holm. We certainly didn't develop the program with an intent to serve 40% of seniors. If we had seniors with much higher income levels, we certainly wouldn't have expanded. We designed this around actual incomes. In many states, the percentage of seniors below 300% of poverty is far in excess of 40%. We did not develop our program around how to serve 40% of seniors and draw the line there. The way we looked at it as an administration, looking at an individual senior who has to pay almost $700 out of pocket just to enroll in the Medicare Part D prescription drug benefit before they can even receive their first dollar of coverage, their first dollar of assistance in the Medicare drug benefit, they have to pay $670 out of pocket. We felt the appropriate place to draw down for state assistance was a senior who earned less than $35,000 per year. And that's in addition to their housing expenses, their heating expenses, their food expenses, and every other expense that senior bears. That the administration's position, the governor's position, is the correct place to draw that line is at $35,000 per year of income.
Well, my personal observation is that's very generous. I mean, it appears to me that it's rather generous. Mr. Chairman, or through the chair, how many, or can I ask you why the seniors, or do you have an observation as to why, or do you have any idea why the seniors are not signing up, or what the, if you're only at 6,900 or something like that you have signed up so far? Do you know why that is?
That's fine for the chair, Representative Palm. We've actually, for that cash assistance benefit, I think we have pretty good penetration. And seniors that are eligible are signed up and on the program unless they've made a conscious decision not to enroll. Mm-hmm. Where we've had difficulty enrolling seniors is a smaller subset of the senior care bill that was passed by the legislature last year. And that is, which is not represented on this chart, and it actually will go away if this bill is passed, the governor is proposing. Is a smaller subset of seniors between 135% and 150% of poverty. That's the demographic we're having difficulty enrolling seniors. We're pretty much fully enrolled where we expected to be for the cash assistance. That demographic 135 to 150 in which the previous senior care bill provided simply a prescription drug subsidy, it's been very difficult for us, to reach that market because it's difficult to identify those seniors in that small income stratification. It's been very confusing for the seniors, too, to enroll in a prescription drug subsidy. At the same time, there was very confusing information coming out of Health and Human Services at the federal level. The Medicare drug benefit had been passed. It wasn't implemented yet. HHS at the federal level had tried to put out an intermediate plan of a prescription drug subsidy as well, which we were going to augment, and prescription drug discount cards. the message that was coming out of HHS, the media, the information around the drug cards was very confusing. We had a number of meetings, and we have continued meetings with AARP in this state and other seniors groups to try to find ways to remove some of the confusion. What we focused on with AARP are ways to simplify the materials and do joint advertising campaigns. We're doing that now. The seniors are there. The real challenge is the education effort. What's pretty complex, which is for low-income seniors being able to understand multiple prescription drug cards that were options, prescription drug subsidies that were offered by the federal government and the state government or weren't integrated. I think a lot of those questions and those concerns, I think, will be gone next year because we're going to be moving away from what's sort of a patchwork approach, these subsidies and cards towards an integrated drug benefit, where seniors either enroll or don't enroll. But as I mentioned to Representative Jewell's question, John and I and others in the department had meetings with Region 10 and the Social Security Administration, who will be handling a portion of this drug benefit, getting up and running the subsidy piece. There's a lot of information that's going to be going out to seniors this year, even with absent anything weekly on senior care, just getting seniors to enroll in this new Medicare Part D. Because some seniors, again, who are low income, will have preferential treatment in terms of assistance under the federal benefit. And getting them to enroll in those programs and understand this benefit has been very difficult. And we're going to be engaging in our program as simultaneously. What we're doing meetings now with the federal agencies is finding ways that if we are successful in getting this bill passed and we're going to implement, that we can integrate our application process with the federal agencies and not have sort of redundant application going to seniors, which further confuses them. But it's a legitimate concern and question.
I appreciate it. Through the chair, just one follow-up. I'd just like to make the observation that if it only is costing you $450,000 to administer $17 to $18 million, it appears on the outset that you're doing a very good job. So I appreciate that percentage of funds that are hitting the ground. So thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, one quick question. And I'm not familiar with the programs that I'm asking this question about. Whether it's through Indian Health Service or in any other way, is there a double dip element to this, potential for a double dip element at all?
I'm talking about the action, the regulations. It certainly wouldn't be a double dip on the beneficiary side. It's really a payor question, who's making the payment on that claim. The individual recipient's not going to receive a benefit from it. I think there is going to be, and I was asking John to answer, he doesn't seem ready to answer.
Well, I wasn't sure of your question.
We're trying to digest the federal regulations that have come out on how they're going to implement, because there were questions about dual eligibles who are Medicare eligible but also IHS beneficiaries.
Maybe what you could do, Mr. Chairman, so you don't get so upset with me here, is those sensitivities are going to come back on, you know, up, ramping it up from 300 back down to 200 or 175 or whatever you're going to do those sensitivities. Maybe you could bring that back to this question back.
Okay. We will have them in front of the committee again, I'm sure.
I'll be happy to answer the question now. But regarding the interaction of the systems, there was considerable questioning going on with the federal agencies of individuals that were these dual eligibles, whether or not they would be eligible for the Medicare drug benefit and the IHS benefits. And I believe as of now they will be.
They are.
And really this is an issue not for the beneficiary. For the beneficiary it doesn't mean much. What it means is whether or not tribally operated healthcare systems in Alaska will have to use their IHS dollars or be able to avail themselves of Medicare reimbursement to pay for their drug expenditures. So it's really an issue for the person who's providing the service to see which fund source they're going to use to pay that benefit. For the consumer, they would continue to receive their benefits under IHS where they already have their coverage, regardless of income.
So does that have to do with how aggressively you pursue something or not?
It's through the chair. We do, under federal law, by virtue of participating in the Medicaid program, we cannot discriminate against IHS beneficiaries in our state programs. So we will be, I guess we will avail the program equally to all Alaskans and would not discriminate against IHS beneficiaries. I think I would expect we would work with the IHS as well as other groups to make their constituents aware of this benefit.
To the Chair, Representative Kelly, right now the Medicaid program is a very high enrollment, very high enrollment. It's very difficult for the state to continue to fund it. And this legislature and future legislatures are going to have to make decisions about who is and who is not eligible and what services are covered under Medicaid. But right now we have almost 130,000 Alaskans on Medicaid in this state. We're getting close to having 25% of our population on Medicaid. Of that population right now, and as John mentioned, through a combination of constitutional protections and court rulings, we as a state provide Medicaid benefits in all of our programs, irrespective of that individual's eligibility for other IHS benefits. Right now, we have almost 40% of our Medicaid population are dual eligibles. They are beneficiaries who can receive services through Indian Health Service or through the Medicaid program. And we operate all of our programs in the department and have historically in a way in which it's irrespective of your eligibility for IHS benefits under the Equal Protection Clause of the U.S. Constitution.
And there's nothing we can do about making sure that that makes sense under this program?
Well, it's fine, Mr. Chair. President Kelly, what we have focused on, again, this is largely a reimbursement issue for the payers, who's paying the dollar. When we look at Medicaid payments, for example, which is where we still are going to carry on probably the largest prescription drug expenditures for the state of Alaska, what we have done is work cooperatively with Native health organizations to have them be the primary provider for those Native beneficiaries. Under the Indian Health Care Improvement Act, which was passed in 1976 by Congress, when a Medicaid, these dual eligibles who are Medicaid and IHS beneficiaries receive their services through the IHS, which in Alaska are the compact and Native Health Corporation facilities, those claims are processed at 100% federal dollars, so we don't expend general funds even though they're a Medicaid claim. I think there's going to be a number of interactions as we deliver this benefit, but overwhelmingly the greatest interaction will be between the federal Medicare program and the IHS privately operated facilities who operate pharmacies and dispense prescriptions to their beneficiaries.
I guess I don't mind the federal government. Can't do much about the federal government treating people differently because of the color of their skin, but I always hate it when our state does it. And I just hope there isn't something in there that we're starting a new program, and I just don't understand enough about it, but something that has the kind of brain damage in it that gets us to the something like the PERS-TERS mess that we've got. So.
Respond to the Chair, Representative Kelly. I think this administration shares a consistent belief with you, which is that we do not discriminate any of our programs based on ethnicity or any other basis. And we will not discriminate against Alaska Natives or non-Natives, and we apply our programs uniformly, and that's how we do it in the department.
Thank you.
Commissioner, you made a statement a while ago that 25% of Alaskans are on Medicaid. Is that an average for, how does that compare to other states on average?
Mr. Chairman, what I've learned is never say a number unless you know where you rank amongst the 50 states when I come to this committee. I'll start bringing a book about this thick every time I come here. I don't know where we rank. I know we're pretty high in terms of population. I've had numerous conversations with members of this committee and both bodies and many committees that I am extremely concerned about the ability of the state to continue to fund these programs going into the future. We have a mission in our department which cannot be accomplished if we can't make sure that there's health insurance in this state. Who provides health insurance is a legitimate debate. We have a Medicaid program. Its eligibility criteria and its optional services are defined in statute. And it's an entitlement program, and if an individual presents themselves into our public assistance facilities and meets the criteria as established by legislation, we enroll the individual. And we're providing that benefit. When I said 25%, we're not there yet, but we're getting close. We have about 130,000 Alaskans right now, which simple math tells you we're only a few years away with our growth trend of being almost a quarter of the state. That's a tremendous financial burden. For the first year ever of this fiscal year, the total funding, not general fund, but total funding of the Medicaid program will exceed $1 billion. And the general fund is about 35% of that. And the general fund portion may increase in out years. Right now, we have the advantage of some attractive federal funding, which may leave. We had a hearing about that recently. We are committed to delivering the services and focusing on self-sufficiency. So what we're continuing to work towards is how to get people off the programs, into jobs, and into sustainable private sector health insurance plans. this legislature and future legislatures and administrations are going to have to wrestle with this issue, because the cost inflation in this program is growing faster than any other revenue source. And as you look at other states even, and you look at cost inflation in the Medicaid programs in other states, we're probably only 10 years away for some other states seeing, based on current growth rates, Medicaid being about a half of the state's budget, 50% of the state's budget, and some other states pretty soon, unless there's drastic changes.
Representative Stokes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you have the challenge of getting a lot of people on the program in a short time, but did you run the eligibility on some of an honor system, or did you have intensive eligibility screening?
Responding to the chair, Representative Stoltz, when we first started this up, actually began two falls ago, the actual effort of beginning the cash assistance component of this, it was a guerrilla program, getting it up and running. The direction was to get it up and running in matters of weeks. Quite honestly, it was overwhelmingly relied upon the honor system when we first started up. We did retrospective quality assurance and reviews and audits on it. We found actually a very very low fraud rate in it. I think that by far our seniors are the most honest bunch we have in the state. We can say that unequivocally. As what we are seeing, though, is as this program has matured and as it has become implemented in statute and certainly in this proposal, we have drastically increased the reporting requirements and now run it.
I'm sure
in a similar fashion with our other programs.
Chairman, I'm sure you and the Attorney General just relish the opportunity to take an 85-year-old widow to court for a couple hundred dollars of the fraud of it.
We did have some fraud referrals, and we did make those referrals to the Department of Law. The program is now integrated. It's up and running. It's been integrated into our traditional program integrity application processes and audits, and we'll be continuing that going into the future.
Representative Keller.
Just a quick one on the 57%, 57.2 or whatever it is, going down to 50, hitting us for 50 because of the difference in 1 year and 70 in the next, as I recall from the other day. And
that is not in the budget, the potential for losing. You hold an ace on that. Would you give me your percentage chance that you think you'll win that thing versus being skunked?
Responding to the chair, I guess I'm becoming a bookie now. I'm not sure. I understand your question. It's a difficult question. I certainly am not going to prevail on this. This is something our congressional delegation will be doing the work on and deserves the credit if they're successful in doing this. Right now, only one state in the union has a state-specific adjustment, and that's Alaska. It was won in 1997 by our governor, Senator Murkowski, at the time. And again in 2001, which is now the one that will expire because it was a 5-year adjustment by the governor when he was the United States Senator. I worked with him on that adjustment and spent a lot of time. I can tell you it was the most difficult thing I did as a staffer in Washington, D.C., was getting that adjustment. It's going to be a lot of work, but we have a good congressional delegation. We have a very senior congressional delegation, and we're having ongoing dialogue with Senator Murkowski and Senator Stevens and Congressman Young, and we are optimistic, and it's our intention of working cooperatively with them and other partners in Washington to get this fixed. It can only be fixed statutorily by Congress. There's nothing this legislature can do other than fund, or not fund. It's certainly a discretionary choice if it's not passed. I can only tell you it's going to be a great challenge, and it's going to be difficult. The success is like this legislature, is dependent on a number of things. In Washington, it's even more complex. Freestanding bills do not pass in the United States Senate. They don't debate or pass freestanding bills. All bills are rolled into larger vehicles and are moved through as attachments to larger bills. So is there going to be a larger bill that will be passed, which this could be attached as a rider to? That's going to be a challenge for our delegation. What we do know is that the dollars ultimately come to the state but go directly through the state and out to providers all across the state, from Fairbanks Memorial Hospital, Alaska Regional, Providence, substance abuse providers. It's all the clinicians and the providers in the state are the ones who are receiving those dollars.
I bet I'm not going to get a percentage, am I?
What's that?
I bet I'm not going to get a percentage.
Not for me, you're not.
Thank you.
So the impact's real, and so they are also invested in this, and they have also been cooperative in working with our delegation to get it passed.
We were told the other day in another venue well, different words, but I perceive what I was being told that somebody believes it's a slam dunk, so I don't anymore. Thank you.
Representative Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I think, Commissioner, you made the comment that we like to know how we rank with other states, and I think the reason why we're so sensitive to that is that we get criticized for being too liberal, too generous in our Medicaid programs and with our permanent fund dividends and with our senior property tax exemption programs and all these other entitlements we have up here. So I think that's why we are constantly asking, because personally I don't think we are that generous up here, but it's always good to have a benchmark. So if we don't pass this program, what options do our seniors have? Because it seems like when we voted on this last year, we meant for it to end in 06.
Mr. Co-Chair, if this legislation is not passed by this legislature, legislation is introduced by the governor, I'll assume that nothing passes, not an amended version, but nothing passes. On January 1 of 2006, seniors who are receiving cash assistance will have that go away, and seniors who are currently receiving a prescription drug subsidy will have that go away. And any other senior who's being offered a benefit under this plan would get none. What they would get instead was simply their traditional Medicare prescription drug assistance, which will begin. For seniors below 135% of poverty who are currently receiving cash assistance, they would have no cash assistance from the state through this program. There still would be other programs the state offers. And they would receive a fairly comprehensive prescription drug benefit under the Medicare benefit. For those above 135%, they would begin to pay premiums and deductibles for their prescription drug assistance. For that senior, say at 160, 175, 210, whatever it is, of poverty, they would pay, if they want to enroll in the prescription drug benefit and get a benefit, they'll have to pay probably about $45 a month.
About $35 a month.
$35 per month for their premium, and then once they pay their premium each month to enroll in the prescription drug benefit that Congress has afforded them, they would have a deductible they would have to satisfy first before they can receive their first dollar of assistance, and that would be $250. So they'll have to expend about $670 during that year, and then once they expend $670 to purchase their premium and their deductible, they then will receive a portion of their prescription drug costs paid for by the Medicare program.
Through the chair, I want to say one special concern is that we talk about this monthly premium amount that Medicare Part D will charge, and as the commissioner mentioned, Part D participation is voluntary, but if someone chooses not to participate after the initial open enrollment period, they're subject to a penalty that's 1% of the premium per month, I believe. If they do not enroll upon becoming eligible. So if there are seniors that really feel like they can't afford to enroll because maybe they're not using that much prescription drugs now and they have some other pressing need, they may pay a substantial penalty if they do later need the Medicare Part D benefit.
And that's consistent with Medicare Part B, which requires seniors to essentially pay back if they did not pay into the Part B program and later enroll.
And I think Representative Holm or Kelly, somebody asked that you show us different scenarios of the cost at a, sure, say 135% above poverty level, 150. I guess the number I refer to, and I know you and I disagree on this, is the match with the Denali Kid Care at 175%, which I also know you'd rather see that at 200%, but it is at 175. If we could just see the different alternatives there, I think that would be helpful.
For both of the chairs and the committee will provide that, and shouldn't take us long, so I think we've actually all done, we've done that work, so it's simply just sending it over to you.
Great.
Any other questions? Representative Kelly, are you sure?
I'm sure.
With that, Commissioner, thank you and your
thank
staff
you,
for being here. Tomorrow we'll have an overview from probably the commissioner.
OCS. Deputy Commissioner.
And with that, we'll meet at 1:30 tomorrow. Once again, Commissioner, thank you for staff.
Oh, thank you, sir.
And thank the members.
Thank you.
And we'll
adjourn.
Thank
you, sir.
Sorry.
All right.